This is BFBS, the Forces Station.
I'm Hayley Hammond, and I've been based in British Forces Brunei for the past 2 years. One of the most significant sounds of the country, aside from the insects and constant hum of air conditioning, is the distinguishable wop-wop-wop of the Bell 212 aircraft flying overhead. However, after 28 years of serving in the British Army, she was retired from service on Friday, 30th of September this year. So I wanted to find out more about this aircraft and her incredible career. Not only was she leaving Southeast Asia, so were the Army Air Corps, an overseas posting they had retained for more than 50 years. Over the next 30 minutes, I speak to a variety of people who have worked closely with the Bell 212, also known as the Twin Huey. With 36,000 plus flying hours and over 2,000 lives saved in Brunei alone, it really is the end of an era. But what was the nature of her role for the British Army? Major John Morton Race, OC 667 Squadron, told me what the Army Air Corps do in Brunei.
Army Aviation has been operating here in Brunei for well over 50 years. We've been operating with multiple aircraft. Essentially, our role that we conduct here allows us to support all the various exercises that take place. We have the support to the Resident Infantry Battalion, Royal Gurkha Rifles. In other supporting activities that we do is for the Jungle Warfare Division. The vast majority of this does require troop movements and stores movements in and out of the various landing points in the jungle.
The specific role here is not just confined to Brunei, is it?
Absolutely not. I mean, we provide all this aviation support to the various exercises, moving troops and stores. And then whilst they're in the trees, we provide this medevac capability day and night. But also one of our other missions and tasks given to us by Commander BFB is the NEO-HADA, so non-combatant evacuation and hazard and disaster relief. This was particularly pertinent back in 2005 with the tsunami that took place in Bandar Aceh. The flight itself actually deployed in extremely short order. The aviation support to the Bandar Aceh operation was approximately about 6 weeks, and they detached there with the entire flight, two aircraft, all the engineers, and supported the effort, which obviously an absolutely horrific disaster.
Bell 212s haven't just worked for the Army in Brunei. They were also based in Kenya. Major Phil Wilkinson, a former qualified helicopter instructor for 7 Flight, flew the aircraft in Kenya with 25 Flight. But what was their role there?
So we did medevac, exactly the same as they do in Brunei. We were doing that 24/7, but also we got the great honour of doing range clearance. So when the troops were going to do any live firing out there for the training, we obviously had to clear the animals off those ranges.
Oh, wow.
And that included the big five. So your elephants, your lions, your hippos, all that kind of stuff, they all had to be moved off the range. So basically, we got an incredible helicopter safari, which was absolutely amazing.
How did you move the animals? Were they underslung loads?
No, it was literally, for want of a better phrase, you sneak up behind them in a very noisy helicopter and chase them.
Okay. Did they always move?
Occasionally had the odd big bull elephant who was like, nope, I don't care if you're a helicopter, I'm not moving.
Goodness me. So what an incredible experience to do that. And it's very much bittersweet end of an era that the Bell 212 is being retired. But where else, other than Brunei, Kenya, has the Bell 212 served for the British forces?
So it did a very similar job out in Belize. So if you imagine Brunei is where initial training for jungle warfare instructors takes place through JWD, that initial training for the jungle warfare instructors, they take that back to the field army, and then the field army units can then go training. But they don't go back to Brunei to train. They used to go to Belize. And out there, the Bell 212 is doing the same job for that training.
It's one of those things, isn't it, that for the British forces, these aircraft haven't seen combat like it had in its time with the US military, but they're still just as vital roles that they were there to do.
Absolutely. So the guys training, whether it be in Brunei or in Belize, they couldn't go into the jungle unless the Bell 212 was available and serviceable for that medevac role, because clearly you can't get vehicles in to get casualties out when they do injure themselves. So yeah, they couldn't train if it wasn't for the aircraft being there.
Before working for the military, some of the aircraft were owned by Bristow and worked in Iran in the 1970s. They were used on the oil and gas exploration and have quite a story of how they got out, now shared by Draken engineer Andy Crate.
Now, the interesting part is we actually have two of those ex-Iranian aircraft in Brunei at this time. The aircraft were actually evacuated on May the 9th, 1979. This was just after the Shah fled Iran and Khomeini took over. It was during this period that Bristow, at boardroom level, top secret in Redhill, Surrey, formed a plan to evacuate 12 of the 13 212 helicopters.
Now, how did they do this?
Essentially, the crews were sent out coded messages to be ready to depart. The aircraft were got ready, spares were loaded, and a plan was made. There was a go-go signal, and the helicopters lifted off. They'd flight planned, training, whatever mission, anything but exiling to Dubai. Interestingly, one of the machines had a bit of an oil leak on the way, and an engineer at the time mended it by cutting a piece of Coke can and actually winding it into the threads of this leaking pipe. We managed very successfully to get 12 aircraft out and into Dubai.
Andy Crate, Draken engineer, with that fascinating insight into how the aircraft escaped Iran. Now, these aircraft are certainly well-travelled and have experienced some incredible moments in history, but how do they stay in the air 24 years after they stopped being produced? Draken are a company who maintain a variety of aircraft across the world, and they looked after the fleet in Brunei. Chief Engineer Mick Glover and Avionics Engineer Ben Graffam worked with the aircraft up until her retirement. Ben actually started working with her when he was serving in the British Forces. He told me about his military background.
Yeah, I was in the British Army. I did 13 years, and my last 3 years were spent right here in Brunei fixing these very same helicopters I'm doing here 20 years later.
So you've gone from being a Remy engineer to an engineer with Draken. But what is the day-to-day tasks of that job?
Our main priority really is to make sure they're pushed out on time and ready to go and serviceable. So mainly our job is preventative, so we're inspecting the aircraft to make sure that it's safe for everyone to get in.
And Mick, can you just tell me a bit about these aircraft? Because they stopped being produced back in 1998. They're kind of flying museums. Where do we even begin to describe the Bell 212?
Yeah, good question. So our oldest aircraft was built in 1972 in June, and our oldest flying aircraft has over 36,000 flying hours on, which is pretty impressive for a helicopter. They've worked all the way through the world, from being oil and gas aircraft on the North Sea. They've worked in Trinidad, Nigeria, Somalia.
And they are working here, but they're only working here because of you guys. What work goes into keeping these aircraft in the air?
So there's a lot of work gets involved in these. So we have a 490-page maintenance program that tells us what to do, and maintenance manuals that are around four times the size of that that tell us how to do it. Everything from a pre-flight inspection up to a five-year, 5,000-hour inspection, and everything in between.
And what I find quite interesting, and people listening might not actually know this, whilst they are military-flown aircraft, they're not military-owned, are they?
That's correct, yep. They're owned by FB Heli Services. The aircraft are civilian-owned and operated, military-registered.
So as an actual aircraft, the Bell 212 was very first flown in the late 60s. What goes into making them fit to fly 50 years down the line?
Very little difference from when they were 0 hour and brand new. We still do the same inspections that were carried out at the beginning. Majority of the parts are still available. Difficulty is in with our modified and non-standard parts, which can be challenging to get. And there are a lot of modifications on these aircraft, all the way from the type of radios fitted, all the way through to the different seats that we have.
And these modifications, I mean, now I look at the Bell 212s and I kind of see them as a boy racer vehicle, but in the air. Would you say that's the right way to sort of describe them?
We've got less spoilers. A lot of this now is autonomous. Like, the aircraft has systems now which talk to air traffic control, completely autonomous to the pilot's inputs. And so all these little boxes, they've gone in and they've shrunk and they're there. It still all looks the same from the outside, but with all the wizardry on the inside, completely different. We've got quite a contrast. You've got technology that's sort of 2 years old in front of them to technology. I think the last CMM was we were looking at for a certain component was first published in 1958. So that's how old some of the technology is on these aircraft.
And I have to ask as well, we've currently got three aircraft out here in Brunei. Of all the aircraft you've worked on during your time here, though, with the squadron, do you have a favourite one?
Yeah, 815, I guess because she's a bit of a whipped dog at times. You know, she got flooded out in the Mulu. She had a fuel hose burst while refuelling that sprayed 100 litres of fuel straight into the cockpit. She's had quite a hard life, always comes back, stronger than ever.
I feel like it's like an old dog.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
And for you, Ben, what's your favourite aircraft out of the fleet and why?
Mine definitely, unfortunately she's not out here now, was Zulu Hotel 814. She was supposed to come out of this year, which would have been interesting, but that's the aircraft that I sat in the back for 5 days as we flew her down to North Queensland, Australia, which was where I met Shera, who I'm now proud to say is my wife.
So now we know how they stay in the air, but what is it like to fly the twin Huey? WO2 Etienne Kutzer was originally a crewman, then converted to the front of the cab. He shares his flying history as a pilot in the Army Air Corps.
I started in 2011, did 3 years on the pilot's course flying Squirrel. Then I converted onto Lynx Mark 7 and flew that for a few years. And then Mark 9 Alpha, did a couple of tours. And then I converted onto Gazelle before I got selected to CTT on Bell 212.
So that's quite a lot of aircraft, really, within a short span of time.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to be able to fly so many aircraft. It doesn't happen so often anymore, but yeah, feel very privileged.
And in terms of Bell 212 as an aircraft, what is it like to fly it?
It's a very old lady to fly. It's like if you could fly a bus, it's potentially like flying a bus. So everything happens very slowly. Anticipate everything well ahead. She doesn't respond very well, but it's a great aircraft. It sounds amazing. It's very historic.
Feels like you need to treat her right then.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is it like then in comparison to other aircraft you've flown?
It's a little bit of a step back, not too dissimilar to the Gazelle, to be honest. It's still dials everywhere and big fat switches, but they're trying to incorporate some modern glass cockpit into it, you know, half decent GPS, moving map, etc. But it's definitely a step back to what the new platforms we have, the Apache and the Wildcat, for sure.
Now, the Brunei jungle is an unforgiving terrain to fly in. What is it like as a pilot, this office view that you've got out here?
It's amazing. It really is. We're so lucky to be here. It's really sad that we are leaving, but like I say, the office is amazing some mornings, you know, seeing the cloud coming out of the jungle. We are very fortunate to be here to fly in this environment. And I think we've had the perfect aircraft for it. Really well-built aircraft.
When you look down from your pilot seat, it's just trees. Broccoli, I hear you refer to it as. Have you got to know these pieces of broccoli well? Can you say, right, you know that particular tree and everybody knows which tree you're talking about?
100%. So when you get new people in and you do explain to them that you will be referring to that tree as turnaround tree or Cornish tree, you know, it's got three legs, or just brown tree. It sounds odd, but once you've operated a while in the jungle, it does stand out. They've got personality.
I love that. I'm just picturing now Grandmother Willow from Pocahontas. These trees are talking to you guys as well as you land. It must be such a rewarding job as well. We've done the math. And there's two particular quite big exercises the squadron supports each year that sees on average 20 medical evacuations each time, plus all the others thrown in there. The Bell 212 has easily saved over 2,000 lives during her time in the jungle alone.
Yeah, it's amazing too. When you work out the figures, it is impressive. We can't thank it enough, I think. You know, we rely on this old girl so much. What she's done, what the crew have done, what the people here have done. Yeah, when you put it in figures, it's amazing.
And as the Bell 212 edges closer towards her retirement for the British Army, you could be part of her final journey in Brunei. How would that feel if that was you?
I think it's a real privilege, you know, to be the last to fly the Bell 212. And you say it's getting retired from here, but they're going on to bigger and better places. They're going to Canada. They'll still be flying. They'll just be in for the British Army. And it'll be a real sad day to see them go. Yeah, she'll take a little piece of her heart with us.
It isn't just the British Army who have flown this aircraft. The Vietnam War is also known as the Helicopter War, largely down to this iconic machine. 5,000 Hueys were sent to Vietnam by the US military and only 1,800 returned. Grady Harbour is an instructor at Flight Safety International based in Dallas, Texas. He is a retired US Air Force and commercial pilot who has over 6,000 flying hours across the different models of Huey. Starting with fixed-wing training, he then moved to rotary as an add-on and has flown the Bell for the military and in the civilian world. He told me which countries he's flown her in and his roles there.
Well, the Air Force used the Huey, the UH-1F, for both training and before I went to Southeast Asia for my first tour. And my helicopter in Vietnam was the CH-53, the Jolly Green. And then I came back and flew fixed wing until I retired. While I was waiting for the airlines to come and pound on my door, I took a job with Era Aviation offshore, flying 212s and 412s. For whatever reason, they just didn't pound on my door because no matter what the Air Force said, there really was not a civilian use for blowing up bridges at 500 miles an hour.
And that's a skill you'd acquired, was it?
Well, you know, I mean, they have no sense of humor. So anyway, so I started flying that offshore. And in South America, I took a 212 to Rio. In two hurricanes, 18 days, we broke. I mean, it was a phenomenal trip. But the part that broke was a gauge. I have never had, and I tell my clients, 95% of everything we teach here, I've never had a problem with. And I have a little over 6,000 hours in 212 and 412. They're just incredibly reliable. They're not sports cars. They're pickup trucks. They just do their job well. And I have always been extremely comfortable in them. They always performed. And I always have a soft spot for UH-1, 212, 412. Plus, you can use it for anything. You can use it for passengers. You can use it for cargo, rescue, medevac. As you well know, you can basically use it for anything. It's just an excellent aircraft.
6,000 hours you've got in the 212 and 412. Is it always like going back to your favorite vehicle? Do you have a specific favorite aircraft that you've flown in your career?
Among the 212 or 412, no. My favorite helicopter is the H-53 because you always are true to the one that you took to the dance. And 53 took me into combat for the first time and brought me home. So I've got a pretty soft spot for that. The 212, 412 just was an absolute excellent non-breakable bulletproof machine. And that's the main thing I remember about it.
And do you mind if we talk about the CH-53 for a moment and your experiences with that? Are there any stories that you'd be willing to share about her?
Yeah, there was one time that we had a group of soldiers that were in contact and they were being chased. And so we needed to pick them up. We could hear them on the radio running and they were in fairly dire straits. So we saw a small opening. They popped their smoke. And so we went there and started to come down. And the area was slightly smaller than our rotor disc. So we just went down and just started chopping wood. And we landed, lowered the ramp. They ran on board. We picked it up, flew it back, and it vibrated pretty badly. But when we landed, they replaced the six main blades and the four tail rotor blades, and the aircraft was capable of flying again. It was fairly amazing. I ended up with a Distinguished Flying Cross for that one.
Oh, wow.
Other than that, we were cutting trees praying that we didn't hit either a teak or a mahogany tree because they wouldn't break. But, you know, normal trees we could just cut with the blades. And we were doing damage to the blades, but the aircraft was still flyable.
Daryl Pope is a director of training for Flight Safety International based in Tampa, Florida, and a retired U.S. Army aviator. He flew the 212 for most of his 28 years active service, predominantly in Germany and Vietnam. The environment in Vietnam is very similar to that of Brunei, however, with the additional challenge of being amidst conflict during his time there. He shares the details of his unit's mission.
The unit that I was with was kind of a unique unit. We were organized with three UH-1s starting out as D models. We had three of the utility helicopters, and then we had six B model gunships. And our mission was to go out at night and to recon the canals and the rivers and any other place that the military wanted us to do reconnaissance. We were equipped with a huge light. It was a light that was shined down so you could see potential targets. But of course, as you know, if you have that kind of a light shining down, you're a target yourself. And you have low weather. It's a very humid environment. So you are always dealing with weather situations, and fuel stations and fuel stops are few and far between. So when you're flying this UA, your navigation has to be right on the spot because your fuel dependency is based upon you getting to that location and being able to get back. It was very, very challenging.
having that beacon of light, that's like wearing high visibility. Did you have to fly low when you had that light as well? Were you near the trees, avoiding them at the same time as everything else going on?
Yes, we were normally 100 feet above ground altitude and flying somewhere between 30 and 60 knots per hour. So we would fly low, we would fly slow, and we were basically the target. We were waiting for somebody to take a pot shot at us. Or, you know, a lot of times we would come upon enemy troop movements. We would catch them. Of course, when that case happened, we engaged the appropriate targets and took the appropriate action.
Daryl, can I just ask, obviously, every time you went out to do these kind of missions at night, how did that feel knowing that you potentially were going to be fired at?
Well, I would tell you that, you know, and I'll just say this about the Huey. You gained a great respect for the aircraft because, knock on wood, I never had a mechanical issue with the Huey. It never let me down. I never had engine problems with it. I was fortunate enough. I was never shot down. I did take rounds. I did get shot. The aircraft got shot several times. Unfortunately, it was nothing that real damage. But you develop a bit of confidence or a lot of confidence in the aircraft. Of course, in combat, nobody relishes in combat, but it's a mission. It's something that you have to do. And you know that there's potential that that could be the last mission. You may not come back from that. And in my organization, we never really had that happen. But there were organizations that did, as you know, because the mortality rate for helicopter pilots in Vietnam was quite high. But you knew your aircraft, you knew the mission, and you know that if anything, that aircraft was going to get you back. I just can't speak enough about the Huey and the love for the Huey.
I have to say, Daryl, I am yet to meet a pilot who doesn't have a fondness to the Huey or the Bell 212 as an aircraft. What do you think it is about her that makes her so popular and lovable?
Well, it's an easy helicopter to fly. It's very forgiving. It's got a tremendous utility, and it is one of those things that you practice and train to do engine-out procedures, what's called an auto-rotation. That's part of the fun about flying the Huey. Mm-hmm. It's because it auto-rotates extremely well. And I have to say, if you ask anybody, and I would really say a soldier that you're supporting on the ground, they can tell you that that phenomenal sound, that wop, wop, wop sound, every soldier to this day will tell you that they knew the wop, wop, and they knew that something was coming that was probably good. First off, you might be coming to get them out of a bad situation. You might be bringing them ammunition that they needed. You might even be bringing them food. The Huey and the fact that it was born of a need for military use has served mankind well.
I can just hear how proud you are to have flown the Huey as well. The way you speak about her, it's just with complete fondness. And she was your comfort blanket. She was your protection, wasn't she?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We have a lot to thank the Bell 212 for. So, as I bring this podcast to an end, I've gathered some of the most memorable moments from the people who have worked with the aircraft and as part of the Army Air Corps Detachment in Brunei.
Hi, I'm Major John Morton Race, OC-667 Squadron. If I had a flying memory, it would have to be the medevac conducted of the coxswain off HMS Scepter submarine that was approximately 12 miles off the coast. A very, very unique medevac. Never been done by the Army Air Corps prior to or since.
My name's Ben Graffam. I'm an avionics engineer working for Draken. And the thing I love most is the same as I loved 20 years ago, is always end up with this great bunch of people.
Major Phil Wilkinson, former Bell 212 qualified helicopter instructor with 7th Flight. Probably one of my most memorable moments, flying in the Ulu Temburong, coming in to land at one of the landing points there and seeing an object on the landing point, only to get a little bit closer to realise it was actually a pretty big wild boar that just would not get out of the way. And we had to overshoot that. But it just brought home the immensity of the environment we were in, the mountains and the wildlife. And it was just, we're in their home, but in this amazing aircraft.
Hi, I'm Sergeant Sammy Gibbs. Going into lockdown in August 21, we come up with an idea to do a charity event for Mind, and that was travel from Brunei to the UK, which was 7,025 miles. We smashed that record, and within 6 months we done Brunei to the UK, UK back to Brunei with a little bit left over.
My name's Dan Tai. For me, the flying element was some of the best I'll ever get to do in my career. an aging aircraft in hostile terrain added together with some pretty punchy thunderstorms made for some real challenging flying. If I could do it all over again, I definitely would be on that plane.
I'm Adam Allen Winnop. There are two things that the Army Air Corps can do that I felt privileged to be part of. Firstly, is families flying, and secondly, is Santa flying for Christmas. Seeing the expression of excitement and happiness on both the kids' and adults' faces, whether it be either of these opportunities, always made me feel proud.
Hi, my name is Mick Glover, Chief Engineer here for Draken. One of my most memorable moments here was a big group outing we did as the entire flight, all of Draken. We did quad biking down in the Tutong area, and that turned out to be a really cracking day out.
Hi, my name's Major Rhys Jones. I have many fond memories of flying over the Great Rift Valley in Africa, flying past 1,000-foot waterfalls in Belize, or night flying in the Ulu Tutong with the Mulu Mountains rising above me. But what I really look back on and value is the people that I work with. I look back on my time and the people I work with a great deal of pride and satisfaction.
I'm Lance Corporal Barmforth. The most memorable moment has to have been my first experience flying across and over the jungle. As well as that, it's got to be working as part of a close-knit team in a fast-paced environment where it's not just about the work, but also the memories and the bonding made outside of the office, which formed another family away from my own 8,000 miles away.
Hi, it's Sergeant Ben Parker. My most memorable time while out in Brunei would have to be the Day of the Dead party that 7th Flight threw on for the garrison. Absolutely amazing costumes, amazing night, and the effort that went in by everyone that was involved was absolutely epic.
I'm Major Tom Feynman. I was part of 7th Flight from 2018 to 2020, flying what is an iconic aircraft in a really exciting part of the world. I was just grateful to have been a very small part of the flight's history, with some very fond memories, be that medevacs, dropping a goat into one of the LPs, Texas simulator trips, but most importantly, all the people that made it such a sociable place to work.
I'm Colour Sergeant White, and I work for JWD. Hornbill School had a camouflage day, and I had the opportunity to heli-abseil into the school. Over my 19 years of doing some really cool stuff in the military, that was probably one of my most favourite time because I was kind of a hero to my two kids watching, and it was pretty cool to see all the kids cheering for us.
W2 Etienne Kutzer. I can't put one specific highlight in it. I think it's so much. It's every day we're so privileged to be here. I think it's not till you leave that you potentially actually realise just how special this place is and how special the people are here. It's a brilliant place to be, and it's a real sad to see the Army Air Corps lose this posting. It really is.
This is BFBS, the Forces Station.